Now, sociological processes. First, socialization. Question: what do you understand by socialization? Examine its agencies and need. Answer: socialization is a social process. Some definitions from among many are the following. First, V.V. Akolkar. The process of adoption by the individual of the conventional patterns of behavior is described as his socialization, because it occurs on account of his integration with others and his exposure to the culture which operates through them. Now, second, E.A. Ross. The development of we feeling in association and the growth in their capacity and will to act together is called socialization of the individual. Third, Bogardus. It is the process whereby persons learn to behave dependably together on behalf of human welfare, and in so doing experience social self-control, social responsibility, and balanced personality. Now, in this way, socialization is the process whereby an individual learns to behave in accordance with social traditions and mores. The human child possesses a tendency towards imitation. The child develops according to the environment in which he lives. The individual tries to win the praise of the group in which he lives. Man is a social being. He, of his own nature, tries to adopt the culture of society. Man becomes what he is by socialization, and it is by virtue of this that he is believed to be superior to animals. Socialization brings balance to his personality, because the social aspect of personality is also very important. Through socialization, the individual learns to control himself in the interest of society and realizes his responsibility towards others. Socialization develops in him the community feeling, and he learns to cooperate with others. Individuals influence each other by means of imitation, suggestion, and sympathy. In addition to these, social institutions and associations also carry out the individual's socialization. The individual is influenced by many processes in society: praise and blame, cooperation and conflict, submission and ascendancy. These help to form his personality and individuality. Education is the most prominent means to socialization. Now, first, agents of socialization. First is family. The family plays perhaps the most dominant role in the individual's socialization. The child finds much to learn in the behavior of the family members, parents, relatives, and friends. He imitates them in their mannerisms, behavior, cliches, etc. He tries to avoid such activities which result in punishment or which are considered bad in the family. It is the family environment which forms his good habits, and it is in the family that he acquires criminal tendencies. In the book New Light on Delinquency and Its Treatment, Healey and Branner have written that juvenile delinquents mostly hail from families which, at one time or another, have suffered some hindrance in the fulfillment of social relations. Psychoanalysts, prominent among them are Freud and Adler, have proved that a man behaves in society according to whatever he has become in the family. Terman, the author of Psychological Factors in Marital Happiness, has said that only those individuals can make marriage successful whose parents were contented. The preface writer of Women of the Street, a searching book on London prostitutes, has stated that the problem of prostitution is the problem of the parent-child relationships. Boys and girls are spoiled when family contentment and peace are lacking. Many similar circumstances give birth to many thieves, murderers, and prostitutes. Now, second, school. But it is incorrect to believe socialization to be dependent exclusively on the family. Other institutions and associations outside the family also wield influence on the development of man. When the child has grown a bit, he leaves the sanctity and protection of his home to go out and play. At such a time, he is very susceptible to the influences of his playmates. The child in the school is, in addition to the effect of education, vulnerable to the influence exerted by the personalities of his teachers and friends. In much the same way, young men and women learn to conduct themselves and to give expression to their views, such a process being an outcome of education and constant association with teachers, the unique environment, fellow collegiates, etc. Now, third, occupation and marriage. Following college education, the individual's occupations and marriages are strongly influenced by the personality of their life partner, and their future depends upon this to a large extent. In this way, the child in the family becomes successively the protector, husband, and father. The new responsibilities and rights teach him very much. In brief, socialization is a process which begins at birth and continues unceasingly until the death of the individual. Like education, is too is an incessant process. Now, need for socialization. The question why socialization is necessary for the development of the individual is best answered by the examples of human beings who were, for some reason, nurtured outside society. Human beings of this kind are described by Jessel in his work Wolf's Children and Human Child, and by Davis in many essays. In 1920, in India, two children were found in a wolf den, of which one was 8 years old and the other a couple of years younger. The second died after the lapse of only a few months, while the first continued to live for 6 years. It was named Kamala. This girl was completely innocent of the modes or ways of human behavior. She walked on all fours, growled like a wolf, and could not speak. She became nervous at the sight of human beings, as undomesticated animals were wont to do. In this way, due to the absence of socialization, she possessed none of the characteristics of human beings, save for her bodily structure. She was taught to speak, wear clothes, and eat. In this way, she could learn some human behaviors due to the influence of socialization after a period of some years. Socialization is not an exclusive but a prominent source of the individual's development, because heredity also has its importance. The development of the individual with the spread of culture through socialization is impossible. The self of the individual develops only due to socialization. Every social relationship of the individual contributes to his process of socialization. The problem of man's socialization is very complex, and it has not yet been completely solved in any human society. In the words of Davis, the improvement of socialization offers one of the greatest possibilities for the future alteration of human nature and human society. This was from the Narayan's book. Now, from Taylor's book. Agents of socialization. Socialization agents are those who pass on social expectations. Everyone is a socializing agent because social expectations are communicated in countless ways, and in every interaction people have, intentional or not. When people are simply doing what they consider normal, they are communicating social expectations to others. When you dress a particular way, you may not feel you are telling others they must dress that way. Yet, when everyone in the same environment dresses the same way, they clearly convey some expectation about appropriate dress. People feel pressure to become what society expects of them, even though the pressure may be subtle and unrecognized. Socialization does not occur only between individuals. It also occurs in the context of social institutions. Institutions are established patterns of social behavior that persist over time. Institutions are a level of society above individuals. Many social institutions shape the process of socialization, including, as we will see, the family, the media, peers, religion, sports, and schools. Now, the family. For most people, the family is the first source of socialization. Through families, children are introduced to the expectations of society. Children learn to see themselves through their parents' eyes. Thus, how parents define and treat a child is crucial to the development of the child's sense of self. What children learn in families is certainly not uniform, even though families pass on the expectations of a given culture. Within that culture, families may be highly diverse, as we will see in next chapters. Some families may emphasize educational achievement. Some may be more permissive, whereas others emphasize strict obedience and discipline. Even within families, children may experience different expectations based on gender or birth order, being first, second, or third born. Researchers have found, for example, that fathers and mothers' support for gender equity increases when they have only daughters. Living in a family experiencing the strain of social problems such as alcoholism, unemployment, domestic violence, or teen pregnancy also affects how children are socialized. The specific effects of different family structures and processes are the basis for ongoing and extensive sociological research. As important as the family is in socializing the young, it is not the only socialization agent. As children grow up, they encounter other socializing influences, sometimes in ways that might contradict family expectations. Parents who want to socialize their children in less gender stereotyped ways might be frustrated by the influence of the media, which promotes highly gender-typed toys and activities to boys and girls. These multiple influences on the socialization process create a reflection of society in us. Now, the media. Increasingly, the media are important agents of socialization. The average young person spends 6¾ hours per day immersed in media in various forms, often using multiple media forms simultaneously. Television is the dominant medium, although half of all youth use a computer daily. This is more time devoted to media than any other waking activity. The images found in the media are powerful throughout our lifetimes, but many worry that their effect during childhood may be particularly deleterious. Now take the issue of violence. When two young boys shot and killed 12 students at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, in 1999. The public wondered whether their behavior originated in violent programming on television. The high degree of violence in media has led to the development of a rating system for televised programming. Analysts estimate that by age 18, the average child will have witnessed at least 18,000 stimulated murders on television. Programs targeted to children actually contain more violence than other programming. Violence in children's programming is frequently shown as humorous and rarely shown to have long-term consequences. Concerns about violence and the media have been extended to studies of young people and electronic games with marked gender differences in the playing of such games. Boys are more likely to believe that violent video games are more appropriate for boys than girls to play with. Both boys and girls, however, believe that girls who spend more time playing video games are less popular than other girls. Violence is pervasive in the media, but does it affect behavior? Researchers debate this, but there is a strong evidence of the unhealthy effects of violence, especially on children. Violence in the media encourages both antisocial behavior and fear among children and tends to desensitize people to the effects of violence, including having less sympathy for victims of violence. Children also tend to imitate the aggressive behavior they see in the media. Violence in the media is not solely to the blame for violent behavior in society. However, children, for example, do not watch television in a vacuum. They live in families where they learn different values and attitudes about violent behavior, and they observe the society around them. Not just the fictional images they see. Most likely, children are not influenced by the images of televised and filmed violence alone, but also by the broader social context in which they live. Violence in the media only reflects the violence in society, as would be expected by the reflection hypothesis. The media exposes us to numerous images that shape our definitions of ourselves and the world around us. What we think of as beautiful, sexy, politically acceptable, and materially necessary is strongly influenced by the media. If every week, as you read a weekly news magazine, someone shows you the new car that will give you status and distinction, or if every weekend, as we watch televised sports, someone tells you that no really have fun, sorry, to really have fun, you should drink the right beer. It is little wonder that we begin to think that our self-worth can be measured by the car we drive and that parties are seen as better when everyone is drunk. The values represented in the media, whether they are about violence, racist and sexist stereotypes, or any number of other social images, have a great effect on what we think and who we are. Now, the peers. Peers are those with whom you interact on equal terms. Friends, fellow students, and co-workers are examples of peer groups. Among peers, there are no formally defined superior and subordinate roles. Although status distinctions commonly arise in peer groups interactions, peers are enormously important in the socialization process. For children, peer culture is an important source of identity. Through interaction with peers, children learn concepts of self, gain social skills, and form values and attitudes. Without peer approval, most people find it hard to feel socially accepted. Peer cultures for young people often take the form of cliques, which are friendship circles, where members identify with each other and hold a sense of common identity. You have probably witnessed the formation of cliques in school and may even be able to name them. Did your school have jocks, preps, drudgies, and so forth? Sociologists studying cliques have found that they are formed based on a sense of exclusive membership. Like the in-groups and out-groups, we will examine in okay. Cliques are cohesive. That was in next chapter. Cliques are cohesive, but there is an internal hierarchy with certain group leaders who have more power and status than other members. Interaction techniques like making fun of people maintain group boundaries and define who's in and who's not. Peer relationships vary among different groups. Girls' peer groups tend to be closely knit and egalitarian. Boys' peer groups tend to be more hierarchical, with evident status distinctions between members. Girls are more likely than boys to share problems, feelings, fears, and doubts. Beware of generalizations. However, in some all-girl groups, status distinctions form, and one study found that 40% of boys, a substantial fraction, have friendships with a high degree of intimacy. In general, however, boys are more prone to share activities than feelings. As agents of socialization, peers are important sources of social approval, disapproval, and support. This is one reason groups without peers of similar status are often at a disadvantage in various settings, such as women in male-dominated professions or minority students on predominantly white campuses. Being a token, or an only, as it has come to be called, places unique stresses on people in settings with relatively few peers from whom to draw support. This is one reason minorities in a dominant group context often form same-sex or same-race groups for support, social activities, and the sharing of information about how to succeed in this environment. Now the religion. Religion is another powerful agent of socialization, and religious instruction contributes generally and greatly to the identities children construct for themselves. Children tend to develop the same religious beliefs as their parents. Switching to a faith different from the one in which you were raised is rare. Even those who renounce their family's religion are deeply affected by the attitudes, self-images, and beliefs instilled by early religious training. Very often, those who disavow religion return to their original faith at some point in their life, especially if they have strong ties to their family of origin and after they form families of their own. Religious socialization shapes the beliefs that people develop. An example comes from studies of people who believe in creationism. Typically, creationists have been taught to believe in creationism over a long period and are specifically socialized to believe in the creationist view of the world's origin and to reject scientific explanations. Sociological research further finds that socialization into creationist beliefs is more likely to be effective among people from small-town environments where they are less exposed to other influences. Those who believe in creationism are also likely to have mothers who have filled the traditional homemaker's role. Religious socialization influences a large number of beliefs that guide adults in how they organize their lives, including beliefs about moral development and behavior, the roles of men and women, and sexuality. Once religious beliefs strongly influence belief about gender roles within the family, including men's engagement in housework and the odds that wives will be employed outside the home. Religious socialization also influences beliefs about sexuality, including the likelihood of tolerance for gay and lesbian sexuality. Religion can even influence child-rearing practices. Thus, sociologists have found that conservative Protestants are more likely to use strict discipline in raising children, but they are also more likely to hug and praise their children than are parents with less conservative theological views. Now, sports. Most people perhaps think of sports as something that is just for fun, or perhaps to provide opportunities for college scholarships and athletic careers. But sports are also an agent of socialization. Through sports, men and women learn concepts of self that stay with them in their later lives. Sports are also where many ideas about gender differences are formed and reinforced. For men, success or failure as an athlete can be a major part of man's identity. Even for men who have not been athletes, knowing about and participating in sports is an important source of men's gender socialization. Men learn that being competitive in sports is considered a part of manhood. Indeed, the attitude that sports builds character runs deep in the culture by supposedly passing on values such as competitiveness, the work ethic, fair play, and a winning attitude. Along with the military and fraternities, sports are considered to be where one learns to be a man. Michael Messner's research on men and sports reveals the extent to which sports shape masculine identity. Messner interviewed 30 former athletes, Latino, black, and white men from poor, working class and middle class backgrounds. All of them spoke of the extraordinary influence of sports on them as they grew up. Participating in sports is a strong source of gender socialization. Men's sports relationship with peers help form their gender identity. Not only are sports a major source of gender socialization, but working class, African American and Latino men often see sports as their only possibility for a good career. Even though the number of men who succeed in athletic careers is a minuscule, minuscule, percentage of those who hold such hopes, sports historically have been less significant in the formation of women's identity. Although this is changing, largely as a result of Title IX, that was the research, which opened more opportunities in athletics to women and girls. Athletic prowess, highly esteemed in men, is not tied to cultural images of womanliness. Quite the contrary, women who excel at sports are often stereotyped as lesbians and may be ridiculed for not being womanly enough. These stereotypes are a form of social control because they reinforce traditional gender roles for women. With athleticism and fitness on the rise as components of female beauty, however, the sociological impact of women's participation in sports will likely change. Current research finds that women in sports develop a strong sense of bodily competence, which is typically denied to them by the prevailing unattainable cultural images of women's bodies. Sports also give women a strong sense of self-confidence and encourage them to seek challenges, take risks, and set goals. In addition, women report that sports are frequently the background for forming bonds with their other women. Women competing together develop a sense of group power. Women athletes also say that playing sports heightens their awareness of gender inequalities of and playing field. Although sports participation has not been shown to correlate with activism on women's issues, research in the sociology of sports shows how activities as ordinary as shooting baskets on a city lot, playing on the high school soccer team, or playing touch football on a Saturday afternoon can convey powerful cultural messages about our identity and our place in the world. Sports are a good example of the power of socialization in our everyday lives. Now, schools. Once children enter kindergarten or daycare, another process of socialization begins. At home, parents are the overwhelmingly dominant source of socialization cues. In school, teachers and other students are the source of expectations that encourage children to think and behave in particular ways. The expectations encountered in schools vary for different groups of students. These differences are shaped by a number of factors, including teachers' expectations for different groups and the resources that different parents can bring to bear on the educational process. The parents of children attending elite private schools often have more influence on school policies and classroom activities than do parents in low-income communities. In any context, studying socialization in the schools is an excellent way to understand the influence of gender, class, and race in shaping the socialization process. For example, research finds that teachers respond differently to boys than to girls, with boys receiving more of their attention. Even when teachers respond negatively to boys who are misbehaving, they are calling more attention to the boys. Social class stereotypes also affect teachers' interaction. With students. Teachers are likely to perceive working class children and poor children as less bright and less motivated than middle class children. Teachers are also more likely to define working class students as troublemakers. These negative appraisals are self-fulfilling prophecies, meaning that the expectations they create often become the basis for actual behavior. Thus, they affect the odds of success for children. Boys also receive more attention in the curriculum than girls. The characters in text are more frequently boys. The accomplishments of boys are more likely to be portrayed in classroom materials, and boys and men are more typically depicted as active players in history, society, and culture. This is called the hidden curriculum in the schools and consists of the informal and often subtle images, messages about social roles that are conveyed through classroom interaction and classroom materials, roles that are clearly linked to gender, race, and class. In schools, boys and girls are often segregated, which has significant sociological consequences. Differences between boys and girls become exaggerated when they are separated based on gender and when they are defined as distinct groups. Seating children in separate gender groups or sorting them into playgroups based on gender heightens gender differences and greatly increases the significance of gender in the children's interactions with each other. Equally important is that gender becomes less relevant in the interactions between boys and girls when they are grouped together in common working groups. Although gender does not disappear altogether as an influence. Barry Thorne, who has observed gender interaction in schools, concludes from her observations that gender has a fluid character and that gender relations between boys and girls can be improved through conscious changes that discourage gender separation. While in school, young people acquire identities and learn patterns of behavior that are congruent with the needs of other social institutions. School is typically the place where children are first exposed to a hierarchical, bureaucratic environment. School not only teaches children the skills of reading, writing, and other subjects areas, but it also trains them to respect authority, be punctual, and follow rules. These skills prepare them for their future lives as workers in organizations that value these traits. Schools emphasize conformity to societal needs S-O-C-I-E-T-A-L. Although not everyone internalizes these lessons to the same degree. Research has found that working class school children form subcultures in a school that resist the dominant culture. Rejecting the mental labor associated with the school values, working class children inadvertently learn the expectations associated with working class jobs. As a result, the subculture of the school fits the need of the class system.